All right, let me get myself set up here. I've got a. Hello. I've got a couple of. One sort of technical presentation, and then one. I guess you could say good stuff, and then not so good stuff. Okay, what I'd like to talk about now is putting blended winglets on an E-Racer canard aircraft and what kind of performance increases we're seeing. What we're looking at here is Jack Morrison's E-Racer. Jack's down here in the front. You want to stand up and wave to the crowd, Jack? Thank you. So as... I'm going to tell you what I'm going to talk about. First, I'll give you a little introduction. I'll keep that short. Who am I? Whose plane is it? What kind of consulting process did we go through? A little bit about the aerodynamics of the canard aircraft winglets. What Jack did in the modification process. What the aircraft configuration was before and after. What testing Jack's done. What the performance was before and after. Some graphs of the performance. And whether there are any other performance differences in the plane after this modification, as well as whether or not this idea can be extended to other canard aircraft. So who am I? Well, my biography and resume is online if anybody cares to read it. I've loved planes since I was very young, as I'm sure just about everybody in here has, built a zillion models, did a thesis on an electromagnetically launched model glider for the National Magnet Labs. I built two airplanes, a Quickie Q2 and a Cozy Mark IV, which now has 510.9 hours on it. I run the unofficial Cozy Builders webpage and mailing list, and I work for Scaled Composites as a mechanical engineer. I've had a little bit of a hand in a number of projects there. Right now I'm in charge of the transition of the second generation of spaceship and mothership from prototyping into production, so it's very exciting being there. And I do home builder aircraft consulting for people that I like, and Jack fit into that category. I do that on the side. So, this is a picture of Jack's E-Racer. I think this was taken at Rough River a couple of years ago. Jack built it, and I believe first flew it in 96. It's a Lindy Award winner. It's an absolutely beautiful airplane. And he's got over 300 hours on the airframe at this point. And you can see some more pictures here, some of the detailing and really absolutely wonderful work on the plane, which makes it all the more amazing that he wanted to chop it up to make some performance mods to the thing. You know, if I ever had my plane looking like this, I'd put it, encase it in Lucite. So Jack approached me for some engineering assistance with a modification that he wanted to make. What you see here is a picture of, this is a 737 winglet, and you've probably seen some of those if you fly commercially, where they've got a very large radius between the winglet and the wing. And so Jack was looking to put blended winglets on like that. He thought that there might be some performance gain from doing it. And we spent some time via email discussing two different approaches for how to go about doing the modification. Jack was interested in it from a structural and aerodynamic standpoint. And we determined what kind of modification process he was going to go through, how he was going to remove the old winglets, how he was going to prepare the wing for the attachment of the new ones, what he was going to do to fabricate the new ones, how to attach them, and how he was going to ensure that they had adequate strength and stiffness. In the Rutan Very Easy and Long Easy designs, my understanding is that you can basically have a 90-degree side slip at full speed and the winglets will still stay attached. Now, nobody ever does that, obviously, but in theory, that's the kind of strength you're still looking to maintain even after a modification like this. We also spent some time discussing appropriate flight testing after the modifications to determine how things had turned out, both from a performance and safety standpoint. So let's talk a little bit about the aerodynamics of Canard aircraft winglets and the winglets that are used on Rutan aircraft, Rutan derivative aircraft. They're nominally what's known as Whitcomb winglets, which a NASA engineer named Whitcomb came up with as a performance enhancer for crews. And the idea was to increase the lift-to-drag ratio of the wings without making the wings longer and without having to structurally strengthen the wings by having longer wings. In these, in the case of E-Racer, long, easy, cozy, very easy, that's not really what the winglets are used for, because we don't cruise around at best L over D speed. If we did, everybody would wonder why we weren't just flying a Cessna 150, because best L over D speed in these planes is on the order of about 100 miles per hour indicated. Well, that's not why you're building these planes, is to fly at 100 miles an hour. At higher speeds and lower angles of attack, you're not flying anywhere near best L over D. They're not doing the same function that they do as they do, let's say, on a 737. Well, what they do is they act as a vertical stabilizer, and obviously every plane needs one of those. And so, you know, they clearly serve a large function as vertical stabilizer and place to mount the rudders. On a cozy, the lower winglet has a very large aerodynamic purpose, not particularly pertinent to this issue, but I figure it'll probably come up in conversation. On long easies, cozies, and the E-racers, this intersection here is not optimal at all. There's a lot of separation drag here, and I don't have a picture of tough testing of these intersections on these planes, but people who have tough tested them, you can see that up about a foot and a half up the rudder, down to here, and then down out over the trailing edge of the wing, both on both types of airplanes, there's a lot of separated flow, and that causes a lot of drag. And so Jack's idea of trying to do some sort of blending in there and get rid of that drag had the potential for a good performance increase. In fact, because Jack's flying an E-racer, the E-racer, you can see the leading edge of the winglet joins up with the leading edge of the wing. On the long easy and on the cozies, the leading edge of the wing the leading edge of the winglet starts at about the thickest point on the wing, and it's about 4 to 6 inches back from the leading edge of the wing. This is a much better aerodynamic situation because you have less divergence in two directions at the same time. So the potential for performance increase is larger on an E-racer than it is either on a long easy or a cozy or a very easy. So after determining what we wanted to do, Jack started doing it. And these are obviously some pretty crude CAD models and pictures, but the basic idea was create a piece of foam that's going to go in between, create a spar that's going to join to the wing spar and go curve up into the winglet, position the winglet in exactly the same place that it was before. There's the from the point at which the winglet becomes straight, where it's not curving anymore, from here on up, it's exactly the same as it was before. So the only thing that's changing is the intersection area. And so there were attachments for the spar scarfing on, this bar spar scarfing onto the spar of the wing, top and bottom, making sure we had enough structural attachments. And then making sure that we could attach the skins of the foam, both inside and outside, to the skins of the wing. Making sure we had reinforcing layups, very similar to the reinforcing layups that get put on a standard winglet attach scheme on the outside. And then putting the foam in as a filler. And then putting the wing skin layups on, covering the foam, and then reinforcements, obviously longer than the standard reinforcements, but pretty much the same layup schedule on top and bottom. And so you end up with a winglet that's structurally sound, aerodynamically the same from here up, and the only thing that's changed is the blend in the middle. So the configuration before this modification is a standard eraser airframe. First flew in 1996 with a supercharged Chevy V6 engine. And then at some point after a few years was changed to a supercharged IO540 with an auto ignition system. It's got the retractable gear per the eraser plans, and it had the stock eraser winglets. So other than being gorgeous and having a huge high-power engine in it, it's pretty much a stock eraser. Now, after, you can see the blended winglets here, what they look like. They look like in flight. Other than new paint and the new winglets, that's about it. So it wasn't as like Jack did 10 or 15 modifications at the same time, so it would be hard to tease out the differences that you'd find in performance from the just from the winglets alone. So that's a good thing. And Jack did a lot of testing. He's very, very thorough. Here you can see a tough test going on, and what you can see here is that all the flow in this region, right in the intersection where the blend is, that's all attached. There's a little bit of spanwise flow going up the winglet here, and there may be a little bit out on the wing as well. It's a little hard to see, but you can see it's all attached. If this was a standard winglet, what you'd see is little pieces of yarn waving in the breeze, some of them pointing backwards, some of them pointing sideways, just all over the place in that area, and you really wouldn't see them being attached until you were north of this position here. So this is really good. This shows that the flow is attached, that it had that effect that Jack was looking for. And he did a lot of speed and performance testing, and he also did a lot of stall testing, make sure that this didn't affect the stall performance of the plane. Obviously, there are issues there. You got to be very careful about not getting into a deep stall position in rear CG. So here's the raw data. Took a lot of data at different RPMs, manifold pressures, looking at the indicated airspeed and the true airspeed both before the blend and after the blend. These power settings here, do not assume that this is 100. That is not 100% of his rated power, which I don't know what it is, but I think you said it's like well over 400. Yeah. So we're not running at 400 horsepower here. I took the highest power level that Jack tested at and called that 100%. So the object here is at equivalent power levels both before and after, whatever that is, and it doesn't matter what it is, just get equivalent power levels before and after, see what kind of indicated airspeed he's getting. Okay, so this is not full power for the plane, this is just normalized power. And here's what it all boils down to. Basically about a 10 knot speed increase at any power level, give or take. You can see the blue dots are a little bit of data scatter, so you know it's not a perfect fit. You get a little bit of scatter on the blended winglets as well, but at equivalent normalized power levels, you can see at about 67%, it's about 7 knots. In the 80% power normalized power range, it's about 10 or 11 knots, give or take. As you get into the higher power levels, there's really only one data point out here. It would be nice if there were a few more data points out there and you really see what the slope of that line is, but you can certainly get a flavor for what's going on here. This is a big speed increase for an airplane. It's along the lines of what you get for putting wheel pants on a Long Easy or a Cozy, good wheel pants. Sorry? Oh. It's about what you get for putting wheel pants on a Long Easier Cozy, and it's greater than what you get for putting gear leg fairings on. Now, this is a linear curve fit here. It's not perfectly accurate. It's not going to predict what's going to happen exactly, but it gives you an idea for the trends, and that's the important part here, as you can see about the 10-knot difference. So other performance differences? None. As far as Jack could tell, plane flew the same before as after, but just faster. There are no major flight characteristic changes, no pitch, roll, or yaw issues, no differences in the stall behavior of the aircraft. So this is a pretty successful modification. And for somebody that works as fast as Jack does, it didn't take him all that long either. This is probably 6 months worth of work for me, and I don't know whether that would be worth it. But for people building e-racers right now, this is certainly something to consider because it's proven on an e-racer. So, of course, what's going to happen next? People are going to want to extend this to other airplanes, and so can you do this? Now, what I'm going to give you here, these are my opinions. I don't have any data on this. Nobody's done this yet on a long, easy, very easy, or cozy. I can't tell you that it's good or bad. All I can tell you is from an engineering standpoint what my professional opinion is on doing this sort of work. On a long, easy, or a very easy, if you have just a stock airplane, it's probably not fast enough to see a lot of advantage. You could see the speeds that Jack was getting out of his plane, and that 10-knot difference comes in at speeds that are higher than long easies and very easies usually cruise at. You also already are starting off with a better winglet intersection, so there's less gain to be had. There's certainly gain, and there is separated flow in that area on long easies and very easies, but it's not going to be as bad as it started out as on the e-racer. So there's less room for improvement. Now, on the long, easy, and very easy, the CG is, well, what I should start off with on the next one is you can see that there's obviously no lower winglet on Jack's plane. Now, the e-racer starts off with no lower winglet, and Cheryl Dickey's design philosophy is different than Burt's and Nat's with respect to the lower winglet. But you also have less CG motion in the long, easy, and very easy, and in the e-racer than you do on a cozy. So it's not as sensitive. The long, easy, and very easy would not be quite as sensitive to the lower winglet being removed in order to do this kind of modification. It might be more work than it's worth. If I was going to guess for a stock long, easy, or very easy, you might gain a few knots. Not a lot, but a few. On a Berkut, that's a pretty likely candidate because it's fast enough to get a big advantage, like Jack's plane does. It's got a better winglet intersection than the eraser to start with, so there's less room for improvement. But, again, the CG is not as sensitive to the lower winglets disappearing, and it could be worth a try. You might gain 5 or 10 knots. With a cozy 3-place or 4-place and other 3 and 4-seat canards, I would very seriously not recommend this modification. You have a lot of issues with respect to CG position and lower winglet loss, rear CG and deep stall considerations. Plus, the standard aircraft with an O360 and a Mark IV, it's probably on the edge of being fast enough to see much in the way of improvement. It's already got the better winglet intersection. And, again, you're probably going to see a few knots maximum gain. In my mind, that is not worth taking the chance of removing the lower winglets and having rear CG issues in the 3 and 4 seat canards and getting into a deep stall problem. Okay, so that's my email address. That's Jack's email, webpage. We can either take some questions now, or you can wait till after the next presentation. But I'll be happy to take them now if people have questions down here. That was actually something that Jack and I taught. The question was, would canting the winglet outboard create more lift? And the answer is, yes, it would. It would also change the stress distribution in the wing, and it would also reduce the effectiveness of the winglets as vertical stabilizers. And that was something that Jack and I talked about a little bit at first. One of his ideas was to have the winglets out at about a 60-degree angle, and my recommendation was not to do that because of the loss of effectiveness as a lower for directional stability. With putting that large radius in for the blend, you're already losing a little bit of the vertical shape of the winglet, and so I was a little concerned that stability might not be as good. That wasn't what Jack was looking for. There's been a lot of discussion about being able to just blend the top. I am having a very, very difficult time envisioning the geometry that would give you a blend blended top shape and not give you a big, blunt, flat area in the back if you want to keep the lower winglet and keep that vertical nature. If somebody can come up with a geometry and wave it past me, I'll be happy to take a look at it, because that may have some of the advantages of this without the disadvantage of losing the lower winglet. There are a couple other possibilities as well, but again, it's a geometry issue. It's just what's the thing going to look like? The rudder is actuated. It's pretty simple. I don't know if you're familiar with what an internal the rudder bell horn system looks like normally, but the cable comes out the wing and just follows the curve up, and then it's pointing up, and then there's a small bell crank system in there. There's a couple of Ian Ayton out on the West Coast has a similar system where the cable comes up, goes to a little bell crank and push rod, and the push rod just pushes the rudder out. It's very elegant. Absolutely. The curved part of the spar going up through the blended area looks exactly the same as the wing spar. It's got a spar cap on the top, it's got a spar cap on the bottom, and it's got a shear web in the front, and they're all three of those are scarfed over, I believe, a 12-inch length onto the main spar. So there's a lot of overlap, scarfing onto the thickness of the spar caps top and bottom, and a lot of scarfing of the shear web onto the shear web of the main spar, of the wing spar as well. So that tied it in structurally very nicely. Anything else? From the trailing edge of the wing to, are you talking about in a standard configuration or with this? Well, again, that ties in with the geometry issue of, it, you know, you come from the trailing edge and you go up like this, but then what happens down in this area where the lower winglet is or where the rest of the wing comes out? You know, you're going to have this big triangular area that's just blunt in back, and I'm not sure what to do with that. So that's the issue there. And again, if people want to play with some clay and, you know, try and figure out a shape that may end up being nice and streamlined back there, you know, that's fine. Any other questions? Rick?
I don't know if the spar, if you can change the spar cap up, then it just goes to the base of the winglet. The winglets don't have a spar cap in it.
That's correct. And that's that bar just goes up to the base of where the winglet is straight. And then, Jack carried the spar all the way up, just as if it was an extension of the wing itself. So there is not only the external, reinforcing layups, but that spar does go all the way to the tip with the same, it's been a while, I've forgotten, and goes all the way to the tip with the same, spar cap and shear web structure. I can't hear you. I need to start the next presentation because we've only got about 15 minutes left.